It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, I'm off to Brazil.
I know. What's with that? Do you even speak Portuguese?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Well, that sounded like a little Irish.
That was just an accent. I just threw it in there. Now, when this airs, I'll be having just arrived in Brazil and hanging out.
Leery-eyed and world-traveling again.
Oh, to set my tail on an airplane flight for a long one again.
So
yeah.
You trying to get to all seven continents this year?
Back to back to back. No, I'm not, but this is the first time south of our border. I've never been to Central America or South America, so this is
the first time.
Yeah, never been that direction.
Wow.
Never been invited before, so now we're going to go down there.
We'll take you to Mexico.
Actually, what's interesting is that they want me to speak at a house church conference, and I wrote back and said, I've got to tell you, I'm not a house church banner waver kind of guy. And they said, well, we've been trying this for, I don't know, 10 years. They've got 3,000 people involved in various kinds of house churches in Brazil. And they have a conference every year. And they said, we've all read So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And we're not so sure we're house church people either. So
they decided to say, okay, we're not going.
Well, they said, why don't you come and talk to us? And they sent me a whole list of incredible questions that they want to just process through together. How do we rethink? And I don't think they're saying, hey, we're going to throw the whole deal we're doing out the window. But they're saying, how does this other information now inform what we're doing? So it should be a lot of fun.
I think once people realize that so much of this has to do with sort of that shame management stuff, I think they kind of come up, you know, I'm not really enjoying that so much. I'd like a bigger dose of freedom, please.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, you know, but if it's just moving religion home, if we end up with the same clothes and we're just wearing them
religion
in the house.
Religion has come home for the holidays.
That's what I've always said. The Catholics have it the best. If you're going to have a pope, you want him in Rome. You don't want him in your front room on Wednesday nights. That's for sure. So I don't know what they're doing at all. I'm real excited to find out what God is doing there. I mean, That's a culture that's obviously very Roman Catholic, but there's also a real evangelical, supersized megachurch deal down there.
Yeah.
And so you got people who are hungering for something different than that, and I guess we'll find out what it's about.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Prophetically speaking, yes.
We haven't had it yet.
Turkey's in like 24 hours or something like that.
Yeah. Well, last podcast, I cut you off mid-diatribe.
Oh, I was diatribing. Well, you know, I think when you look at the whole flabby body of Christ thing,
yeah,
I think I have. I started off with that impression that everybody really just wanted to grow deeper in God. Of course, right? And
that's what I thought too.
And I've come to realize that may not necessarily be so.
I think the greatest shock for people who go on a bit of a different journey and start saying, hey, this religious performance thing is a trap and it doesn't work and there's something called life and freedom and grace in Jesus that does. And you think everybody else is going to be thrilled to hear that news. And
it's a shock. Even other people on the treadmill says, quit bothering me.
Really, if you're going to whine and fuss at your treadmill, just get out of the freaking gym, would you? We don't need you here.
No, I realize that for a lot of people, you know, legalism is a nice thing because it's a system you can work. If they have some adeptness at the principles, they feel real great about themselves by having a sense of clarity. This idea that some of it's uncertain or I'm not exactly sure what to do, that scares the living daylights out of them.
And even if you're not good at it, going in on Sunday morning and getting beat up once a week,
at least feels good.
It's your penance. I mean, people really, there's a part of that. Dave Coleman really alerted me to this, how much people really like a good
beating,
tongue lashing, when they're not living up to their performance. And it's almost like the tongue lashing is catharsis enough. So I go home feeling better because I've...
Pastor really gave it to us.
Yeah, because I need to work harder, and I'm going to forget that by Monday morning. But at least I felt better. I did my deal on Sunday that kind of clears everything with God, and I get a fresh start. And it really does take... I went to the gym, got my deal in, so now I'm going to stuff my face with chocolate cake and french fries the rest of the day. And just...
Spiritually, what does that equate to?
In some ways, it doesn't work. Yeah, I don't think everybody, bottom line, I don't think everybody wants more of what's real. Some people are really comfortable with what they have.
Yeah, and I think managing their sense of conscience with, okay, well, I kind of did this, but if I do a few of these, you know, sort of, I mean, I don't want to pick on the Catholics as far as, well, pray five Hail Marys. I don't understand that. I've never done the rosary thing and never really understand how they come up with their prescription of what they should do with that. But I sort of look at from the outside, end up going like, I'm not sure that it's a tit for tat. If you screwed up here, you just will make up for it over here.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's any different than the, you know, evangelicals get this hour a day badge for prayer.
Yeah.
Or the Wednesday night is the serious group that shows up here.
Yeah, that's a believer service.
Yeah, that's the really really committed
people. I guess.
But we like them coming because we like the statistics from Sunday morning, even though we think the only serious ones show up on Wednesday night, and it's still the same thing. I'm gonna find some reason I'm better than you because I perform a little better here at this one event or one thing or one ritual or one whatever. And it's kind of a pretty false environment when you're looking for something that's going back to the article we used last time, the flabby body of Christ, going back when the passion is, I want real community. I want people who are sharing a journey, who have a passion for God and his life and the transformation that that life engenders. And I want to grow in the kind of dialogue that helps me know him better and live more freely. Not just I want a once a week event to placate my guilt or pump me up for another hard working week or whatever.
It was hilarious. I heard something out of my wife's mouth that I just kind of like, it was a jaw dropper. I hadn't expected it. We have some other folks that are in our life that, you know, we've been just kind of coordinated by us with. It is becoming a little increasingly difficult to schedule everything because they have so many darn Bible studies to go to.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So Kelly just looked at me like, why do they do so many Bible studies? I'm going like, honey, we used to lead the chorus, you know? I mean,
oh, my goodness, yeah.
We were the four nights a week, you know, strike up the band. I'm leading the parade. And I sat there and just went, gosh, we are in such a different space where the constant attendance of those things is to us now a foreign culture. And I saw my wife just go like, why do they do that?
Yeah, and not even a preferable one, which is strange because, I mean, we're still pretty passionate people about.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about this journey with people. I want to talk about who God is. I want to explore what the scriptures say about things together. But that's often very different than, okay, it's Wednesday night, and we're going to Romans chapter 2, and there's this.
And you know what? In all fairness, there's probably a wonderful place for that. I just know that I'm enjoying the more real life, in time and space, happenstance conversations that I happen upon that are equally as illuminating in terms of spiritual stuff. And I'm just going like, I have fun in those settings as opposed to, well, how does this apply to our life? Well, that's great, you know, but it doesn't seem as dynamic.
And some would ask, since when is it all about your fun? Who cares if you have more fun?
That's a really great question, because, yeah, we shouldn't be having any of that. I thought Jesus said, you know, I want your joy to be made complete. I mean, honestly, how many of us are obedient to that? And that's not a hedonism of, hey, I'm just going to be joyful and do. But I think he's talking about we are meant to have a life that is full with a sense of satisfaction and complete. He desires to cause that to be alive and real in us.
Yeah, but you don't think boring routine is important for people who are growing on this journey?
No.
Oh, see, that's you're quite at odds now with some people.
I don't have my membership dues are not paid up. I'm not part of the institutional man.
Well, a new book came out this fall. It was titled "Why We Love the Church in Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion."
No, you're kidding. I want to see this.
I'm serious. By Kevin, let me get his name right. Kevin DeYoung and Ted Kluck, with a K. With a K. Ted might be Kluck.
I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Ted Kluck. That just sounds like a bunch of chickens.
Well, the title of the review on the book was Why Churchless Christianity Doesn't Work. And then you're going to defend the institutional church.
Okay, but using Mr. Wayne here, the reality, the churchless, how is that possible? How is it possible to have churchless Christianity? If we are the church, I would have to not exist for that statement to be real.
Well, that's the problem with this article. It creates this false dichotomy. You're either in a Sunday morning sanctioned event that we all call church.
Which that alone is valid. Right.
And then anything else you do, other than that, you're a lone ranger just doing your own thing for your own enjoyment, and no one cares. Yeah, going rogue. Yeah, don't get me started. My goodness, I'm trying to keep my blood pressure down going into the holidays, and you want to bring that up. No, but what he says is there's an inherent value to the humdrum mundane gatherings.
And what is it? I'm curious.
I just says because we've always been doing it. It's a historical precedent.
So it's the continuity with historical tradition?
Yeah, that's a big deal of it.
I mean,
yeah.
Really, that, I mean, they got to make a compelling argument, do they?
I haven't read the book.
Okay.
So I don't know. The article doesn't make a compelling argument. It really just says there's these two, there is this world defined by, here's a, it's important to remember that when you have two people at Starbucks who are talking about Jesus, that's nice, and that may be a group of Christians, but a church has order, offices, and certain worship elements. That's what qualifies church as church in his mind.
There's a worship element of going to Starbucks, at least for me.
And if that's your office, then you've got offices there and order.
They got Wi-Fi.
You have to order. You don't get coffee if you don't order.
Yeah, so technically we fit.
I guess Starbucks works. St. Starbucks is rescued again.
Yeah, we go there and worship the elixir.
But I find this view of the church, because I think people who live like we live, we can talk about people who gather that way and say, yeah, that can be a valid expression of church. If the reality is we're sharing the life of Jesus together.
Yeah.
It can. We're not against that. We're not anti.
No, I have tons of friends who still find that very engaging, stimulating, and great.
Right. So we're not anti that, but it seems like this crowd is anti anything other than. There's a minimum threshold of order and offices and worship elements that something has to meet to, quote unquote, be the church. Now, you can't sustain that scripturally that I know of. Scripture doesn't define the church based on order, offices.
Hasn't the whole history of church and its denominations, everyone gets their little pet litmus test by which they validate some and invalidate others who are not adopting that?
Yeah.
I mean, you got the Pentecostal charismatics that say, well, if you don't speak in tongues, you're not one of the real ones. Or if you, Church of Christ, if you're not baptized in their understanding of this saving act of baptism, you're just going like, gosh, it seems to me we're always raising a single little flag, trying to use that as our litmus test, like, here's the essential. And it's like, you know,
or even not just the essential. Here's how we're distinct from them. I remember we were planting a church and we're trying to define our doctrine and we're trying to define who we are, and, you know, for the brochures that we do.
Right.
What's most
our
important to define is our distinctive. How are we different than, thus better than?
Yes, better than. And that's key, even if it's not acknowledged.
And that's not necessarily we're the only right thing, but we are the best thing.
Right, which is why would you have something less then?
And doesn't the house church, relational church crowd kind of fall into that too oftentimes?
Sure, the God journey can too.
Yeah, absolutely. If we
do without all that stuff, so we're really into freedom and life, and the rest of you are just living in that painful thing.
That's why I like coming back to, it's always about, are you experiencing a growing relationship with the God of the universe? And are you experiencing growing relationships with other people on this journey who help encourage, confront, admonish, share life with you? Now, he makes no room for that happening outside of a building with an order and an office. And,
like us. I mean, if you're not doing it, quote, like us,
yeah,
then it's suspect.
Or like it's been done for all of history.
Which is us.
Which is still a very narrow view of history, because there have been lots of groups that haven't fallen into that stuff.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of non-white Anglo-Saxon streams of history that do life very differently.
Yes.
I just go like, we have such a myopic sense of even what we think history is. It's just our history. It's not all history. None of us have traipsed the planet like that.
Yeah. And he does say, the second danger with churchless Christianity is that the same instances, it might not be Christianity anymore.
Oh, no.
Churchless Christianity sometimes seems to be.
You were talking about the God of the universe.
That's interesting. Churchless Christianity sometimes seems to be anti-pastor, anti-sermon, anti-doctrinal boundaries, and the mantra, I want Jesus, not religion.
Yeah. And? Is there a problem and with that?
I get what he says about the anti-crowd. You're just going to be anti-everything that exists. But when he gets down to, I want Jesus, not religion or religious performance, that's what we talk about more. I really go, how do you talk in praise of institutions and organized religion? Because
well, you're going to have to get the book.
Again, the problem? No, I don't think I'm going to download it to my Kindle. I really don't. But you've got voices even, you know, Frank Viola wrote an article. People have sent this to me and said, will you guys talk about this article? It's a Frank Viola on the post-church perspective.
Oh.
And, I don't want to rag on this article too much, but he almost makes the same mistake this other guy does in that meeting at Starbucks doesn't count. Getting together at Sonny's barbecue with three or four men and discussing a journey doesn't count. That's not the church.
Because why?
It's not the church because, A, it's not a physical place to visit.
Starbucks is?
Yeah, but you can go there and the church not be present.
I can't, because every time I do, it is.
The church is present. I never go to Starbucks, so I don't know. I can't
okay,
check that
yes,
part
you're,
out. But
you're the purist.
Well, he talks about the scripture, if your brother sins against you, go confront him, and, you know, if he doesn't
right,
listen to you.
Right, that's called go to my brother.
But what he's saying is, and this is the probably the bulk of his argument, if you don't have an entity to kick someone out of,
oh,
the excommunication factor,
ah,
then you don't have a real
yeah,
fellowship.
Yeah, that's essential.
And if you don't have a group of people to whom you can write a letter,
oh,
like Paul writes to the church at Colossae, if you don't have a specific group address to write that to, or leader to convey that to, then it can't be a real church because the early church had people that you can write to. But I tell people all the time, you could write a letter to the church at Newbury Park, and I could get it around to most of people I know in this area who are the church at Newbury Park. And between my relationships with them and their relationships with others, I think we could pass
yeah,
that letter.
Yeah, just like six degrees from somebody.
And I think you could pass that letter through the church. And then it's, well, there's not appointed elders and overseers, and get back into the offices again. And so,
but we're all talking about man's ways of validating stuff, that you can have all of that and have nothing of a genuine relationship with Jesus. That's my concern.
Yeah.
You can have all the outward form and substance.
Yeah.
Because it does say in Timothy, he talks about, you know, be careful in the last days. There's fierce, perilous times that are come because people will hold
already
to the form of godliness but deny the power there. And you're just going like, he goes through a whole list of stuff that's not real great. And the one that really kind of tops the list is that form of godliness, guys.
Yep.
And you're just going like,
because aren't they in the most dangerous place of all? You think you've got
yeah
what you don't have.
Yeah.
And so you keep serving the form harder. Yeah. But I read this about, you know, go to your brother and confront him and then tell it to the church and the church is going to confront it and talk about it. Where does that ever work? In my history of 56 years of watching institute, the only people who get thrown out of church are people that have sex with people that
exactly
aren't their spouses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything
else you can deal with, you got to throw out.
I've never seen a malicious gossip confronted. I've never seen someone who lies confronted. In fact, we're in a situation right now where we ask for some help with somebody who supposedly does this. This is what the church is for. And how well did that work?
It didn't.
It didn't because you have to hold someone's feet to the fire.
Well, everyone loves a sense of neutrality. Everyone wants to just be everybody's friend, and it's just kind of like, okay, well, but does anyone ever care about actually healing something?
Or getting to the truth of something when there's two competing stories?
You're not going to get to healing without reality and truth. You don't. You never do.
No, it's true.
And as hard as that is, if there's one thing I have learned is your unwillingness to confront reality, your own and others, will leave you sidelined someplace in your own illusion. And I don't call that freedom or helpful.
Yeah, and Paul's admonition, if we're going to grow as the body of Christ, it demands that we speak the truth in love. That's how we're going to grow up. And organized religion primarily is about nice is better than honest. Let's just be nice. We don't want to get down to where we've really got to deal honestly.
Yeah. I mean, without having read Frank's thing that you're bringing up, I would imagine to some degree, in maybe some of these guys' defense, I do think that perhaps when it comes to these issues, maybe they are the kind of people that, you know what, that they'll pull rank to deal with an issue of truth. And for that, I've got to say, great, commendable. It's probably not rank. It's probably the fortitude of someone's personality willing to engage at a level that's uncomfortable. And if we would be that with and for each other, we'd have a much, I think, more glorious expression of what it is to be living this in community.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't have people in your life that can say, you know what, when you do that, I don't like that. That's not helpful, or that's hindering this. Or do you have any idea? Can you be sensitive to this dynamic? If you don't have any of that going on, how are you supposed to change?
Yeah.
And how are you supposed to grow up?
And today when you try it, because when people who defend organized church as the last great expression of Christ's church in the world, you realize that this stuff never – this and the accountability factor is always the – you know, accountability, excommunicatability. And yet where does that live out in any sense? The church is so fragmented. Even the Sunday morning organized crowd is so fragmented, different things. You know, if you say something to me I don't like, I just leave and
go
to another.
Down the road, yeah.
I got a better worship service anyway, and I got better kids ministry, so I don't need you. So this doesn't even work in the framework in which people say it is. Unless a person, it comes down to that, unless I have a heart for the truth, unless I'm willing to engage the difficult discussions, unless I'm willing to listen to somebody who doesn't like me and doesn't like what I've done and doesn't like what I say and willing to listen and hear out what they've got to say, I'm not going to grow up. I'm not.
No.
If I've got to guard myself around, and I think this is always true of people who walk in selfishness, I have to surround myself with people who only agree with me. I don't want anybody who talks a different language than I talk, who's willing to challenge.
We excommunicate those.
We do, even if it's just from my life, I don't call them. I remember people saying to me when I went through this, being resigned by my former co-pastor friend, people would come to me who were still going to that fellowship, and I was still living in that town, and they would say, listen, I don't know what happened between you and that other guy, and I don't ever want to know.
That's usually a signal one. Oh, this is going to be helpful.
Well, I just said, then you know, my answer was, then you never will. And we're like, okay. But even though they were kind of like,
well, see, Wayne, he's still unhealed from that.
I wouldn't know what. I wouldn't know what. You could see that
right.
Curiosity factor, but the deal was, well, that's fine. And I think we've grown up with such a fragile sense of our own personhood and God working in us that we really don't want to talk to other people in meaningful ways. We don't want to be engaged with people who may disagree with us. We don't want to ask the tough questions of our own life or even other people. We want to live in this little, you know, the happiest place on earth. When you walk through the little gate at Disneyland, I'll say, everything's pretense here, and I'm all good. I just want to be happy here. The real world's painful enough. And yet Jesus says it's that speaking the truth in love, saying what's real, saying what's true, engaging people with whom you've got a problem. That's why I love the Matthew 18.
Sacrificing neither of those things.
The Matthew 18 things, go first alone. I don't know anybody that went first alone. Then call me.
Go knock on the door of the institution. You know, one of the things I really appreciate about you and our friendship is we do not think alike.
About a lot of things.
I mean, about a lot of things.
Yeah, we don't.
Okay, but...
And you call me toxic sometimes?
I do. And the reality is what I enjoy about that is I have not had a long history of relationships where that's the case, and yet there's still a deep bond of affection and enjoyment. I mean, I laugh with you perhaps more than I laugh with anybody else. And we have a lot of fun, but we disagree on a lot of things, and yet on some terribly essential things in life, I so resonate with the way you approach life, and I have loved the growth and the development. And it's like, I go, gosh, well, that works great. You know, it's not like times that I'm sure I tick you off. I know I do.
I think we both had times we went away from conversations incredibly frustrated.
Yeah.
With the other.
Yeah.
We have. We haven't done it on air yet. People are like, do it on the air. Do it on the air. Come on, do it. Maybe the political discussion was closer.
Yeah. But I've always, I mean, and I don't even know the answer to this, but I've always felt like, you know what, even when we disagreed, I've always known you really do love me and you really do appreciate the friendship. It's very valuable. I don't ever leave one of those things like, well, forget that. Because there's this overarching sense of, I know I'm valued. I know this relationship is vital. So it brings me back, and it causes me to listen.
And that's not hard work, is it? It's not hard work to love you or your family.
No.
I mean, I do. It's not like I have to keep loving them because God's put us together.
Yeah.
I read Philippians 2 this morning. It just happened to be on my reading today. And this is one of the passages that flies in the face of all that we're talking about here. Because I agree with you. Most human relationships don't work this way. He talks about if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ. So, I mean, he's writing to the body. Now, let's take it as the widest sense of the family of God in the earth. If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness or compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look out not only to your own interests, but also the interests of others, and your attitude should be the same as that of Jesus, who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. I read that passage this morning, and I think about, you know, the broken relationships in my life, because people have either pulled out or people have, and he's saying, you know what, if there's just any compassion, if there's any, live in that space. And I like what you said about relationships that endure. My best relationships have endured disagreement, have endured the tough questions, have endured the frustrations of not seeing things the same way and feeling manipulated or controlled or at least questioned in a way you didn't like. Dave Coleman has confronted me more than the guy who helped me write So You Don't Want Church Anymore, confronted me more than anybody has in my whole life.
Wow.
But I know Dave Coleman loves me as much as anyone in this life loves me.
Wow.
And I love him. And we've said hard, hard things to each other. We have, and we've left conversations with, oh, God.
You want to wring somebody's neck.
But I can't wait to get back with him again and sort that. And that's what he's saying. Don't walk away from a relationship just because something happened you didn't like. Sit down as brothers and sisters and work things out and have that. Stop grabbing stuff. And I think when he says that, selfish ambition or vain conceit, James says the same way. All human conflict.
Yeah, our quarrels.
Are centered right there. Somebody wants something for themselves, and somebody's got ambition or this vain conceit, I'm better than you. And you see that, you know, that's the thing that I've ever killed, every relationship that I've had that have been killed, is someone had to be top dog.
Yeah.
Had to be the boss, had to get all the attention for themselves. Once that happens, then everything in Philippians 2 just becomes a joke.
Yeah.
And that's sad to me.
Yeah.
I read this with tears this morning, going, God, that's what I want in my relationship.
I get that. Well, it's kind of wild when you think of, okay, this is the mind of Christ. He humbled himself, and here's God, very God, in flesh, and yet he's not considering equality with God something to, it's like, that's a little bit of a mind bender. Okay, this is not like someone who's God-like. This is God, very God. And he's not considering, his mindset is not considering God, you know, equality with God, something to be grasped. This is someone who has let go and is living very open-handed.
Yeah.
And is taking a posture of the heart of a servant, looking to say, what can I give? Who can I serve? This is not, gee, I don't have a very good self-image, so I've got to take the, you know, oh, what a worm. This is like someone who knows who he is. And yet he's living in a way that is gracious, other-centered, and servant-minded. And, you know, I got to tell you, when Christ is alive in your heart, that isn't that hard to do. It isn't that hard to embrace and look at people and go, you know what? What can I do here? If you have a sense that I'm living out of that space of being loved, and I feel well taken care of by the King. It's pretty easy to extend that as a heart towards others and just go like, that just makes everything better.
Yeah. I was talking to someone last week that's going through a tough situation and someone's kind of being pretty cruel to them, but they're doing it with, God told me to do this to you, which.
Oh, yeah.
I remember back in the day when I got resigned, that was the same thing. What we're doing is not loving. It's not compassionate. And so then people have to pull the, but God told me to do this to you. What I like about what you just shared is Philippians 2, and people who really know God And people who really know the truth hold it lightly. Because you don't have to defend what's already real. Jesus didn't have to grab something that was already his. Jesus didn't have to embellish the truth by forcing and pounding and saying, I know when people have really heard, that's why Paul talks about seeing through a glass darkly. I know when somebody's really heard the Lord, when they're incredibly humble about it, saying, you know what, I think God might put this in my heart. What do you think?
Yeah, they don't have to force it.
I know they've heard God. The person that says, I've heard God and I don't give a rip what you think. This is what I'm doing. I already know something. You haven't heard from him because that's not the spirit of God in the earth. The spirit of God is incredibly humble. And when you're most certain of the truth, you're less defensive of it. And when you're least certain of the truth of something, you've got to defend it, hype it more.
Yeah, I know that the more valuable things that God has communicated, he's never forced. He's never coerced. He said them, and it's kind of like, hey, if you want to live in that space, come. If you don't, don't. There is not a sense of insecurity that must coerce and manipulate. It's like, you know what? The reality is you will experience the fruit of untruth, and that may be the very thing that welcomes you back to the truth. I think reality does work, and I think God, more than anybody else, knows that. So there isn't this anxious sense of, I must compel others. I have to prove. It's like, no, you'll find out.
Yeah.
I'd love for you to come now.
Yeah.
But if you're not, you'll see.
That's the thing about lies and vain conceit and selfish ambition. It will always consume you. At the end of the day,
yeah,
it's going to eat you. You're not going to get to use it for what you think you can. One last quote from Frank's article, because I thought this is one of those things that gets down to particularly people who are exploring church in a bit of a different way. And he says, now here's the test. Those who belong to post-church church, which I call phantom church or ghost church.
Ghost church. Oh, there you go. Nice term.
Well, look at the terminology. I'm already...
Pejorative.
Yeah, it's demeaning to something you understand. Should ask themselves a question. Can a person write a letter to my church? And I already answered that. I think you can write a letter. I could write a letter to the brothers and sisters in South Africa, to Ladysmith, to Cape Town. I didn't go to one institution.
He can post just
together.
About anything on the internet. He goes everywhere.
And he says, can a person write a letter to any church? Can it be received by the church and read together by all its members at the same time? And here's what I think is most dangerous about that kind of thinking at this stage in the life of what God seems to be doing in the church. I love the way the article ended last week where he said, this is a plea, not a prescription. I want the church to be fun again. And by fun, I don't mean entertaining or topical or cool. I can get all that concert and movies, and I'll do a much better job than the church ever will. No, I want to talk. I want to listen, but to a friend instead of a sermon. I want to be taught, but only if I can ask questions and participate in dialogue. And I think that cry right now, that's where we're at in how do we recover a vital community among brothers and sisters of faith. I don't think we're just going to stick with these dead institutions and rituals are going to work. Now, we've all said some people do that fairly well. There's ways to live loved and encourage people to that journey inside those things. Not all of them are horrible depictions of whatever. But in some sense is that we're going to sit here on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, you in a pew listening to me lecture. Is this the best way that we embrace community? And the gist of the article we read last week is no, that's not going to get to that slow, wonderful community God wants to develop. But I think what is the next step right now? People say, what model of church do we – what do we house church? Do we do cell church? Do we just do Starbucks church and that's it? And I think right now what people, at least I listening to on this journey, who I think are down the road from me a bit, what they're saying is why don't we step out right now of all the obligation that we've endured and have the conversation of what does life look like as brothers and sisters share community together? And let's find that for a while in our homes, in our conversations. Let's not just say, hey, anything structured is bad. I'm not on that page. I think there's a structure to this podcast. There's a structure to everything that we do.
Your body without structure would be a blob.
It would be a mess. So it's not that structure, it's not that even organizing something at some point. Having a marvelous conversation with some brothers right now and sisters in New York that are really talking about how do we facilitate community? Because I meet people I know. I was with someone I believe to be a real apostle in South Africa. And people go, who's that? And I'm going to tell you. But because I don't think the title is important. But he really not only the depth of his life and journey, but how God's positioned him with people to have conversation with. He's really one of those. I meet others that I say, Gus, that's a real pastor's heart. And as I find people, I want to have more and more dialogues. Honestly, this is going to freak people out, with pastor types. And I don't mean those card-carrying. Some of those might be card-carrying, got a title, live in a zoo, but have an office and a deal. That may be true. But there's others that are genuinely gifted to be pastors among the family. And they're asking the question, how do we equip and facilitate? How do we equip people to this journey and facilitate community without being a dependency on ourselves and our lives? Now, that's a dialogue I want to be in. Because I think there's things yet when people say, gosh, it's just this. It's just two or three gathered here, two or three gathered there. Well, it's not just that. That's a wonderful thing. Two or three getting together and having a real Jesus conversation
is a
wonderful thing.
You bring up the dynamic that I've only seen that be really fruitful when you've got people who have grown to a place of maturity that I would say that they are very functional in their capacity to hear and follow Jesus for themselves. You leave them on an island by themselves, they'll be fine. You put them in a group of people, they'll experience a richness of sharing that which they don't like being isolated in.
Right.
But they know how to engage. If people don't know how to do that, and you just group them in twos and threes, there's nothing that happens a whole lot different. I do think there's a sense of you grow up, but I love the fact that Paul talks about the body and he puts it in the context of family, because I'm going like, you know what? My children, when they're young, they are dependent. But if I do a good job of parenting, they're on a progressive journey to an independence. And then you get to enjoy the fruit, maybe down the road, of a wonderful interdependence of friendship that just says, you know what? We can exist apart, but we
don't want to.
We don't want to. We want to be in relationship, yeah. And we do rely on each other. But am I dependent? No, I'm not. Yeah. I mean, that sense of...
Yeah, that's the best thing of parenting. Adult kids, I tell you what, we had a family day down at the Getty Museum on Saturday with my children, their children, my son's girlfriend at the moment, and we just had the best day. Do we need each other? Absolutely not. My kids are responsible, functioning, whatever. Do we thoroughly enjoy getting together? Do we talk about difficult things together? Do the kids ask me times hard questions about their own lives, and I get to explore decisions they're making together with them? We get all that. And it's the best because they've grown to that.
Yeah.
And your point behind that, I think, is this is what I really want to say. If we're going to have this conversation now, I want to have the conversation with people who are learning to live loved and outside the parameters of performance, so that we can really say, what does community look like and how do we facilitate it around us without owning it? And I think that's a discussion we'll get to have. But if we're going to first jump to a discussion of, you have to have a minimal organizational parameter around a group of people before it can even be thought of as the church.
Yeah, that just shuts down everything.
You're already out of that dialogue, unfortunately. And we'd rather you be in it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.